Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. Observations and opinions on football and futsal issues that affect us. We will speak again to John Mitchell, coach of the ANU Premier League, the ANU Under-20 Elite Program at that club. John will speak in detail of the ANU football program, which by any measure is very impressive. He has certainly raised the bar for every club in Canberra, and that includes the two that fought it out at the grand final. As you know, the podcast has the extended version of this interview and will contain many items that time simply does not permit us to broadcast. Before I go on, some food for thought. Something Eamon and I have mused over numerous times. How do we get our talent developed and given a chance to prosper here in the ACT, particularly for those that wish to pursue the prospect of professional football? Life should not stop post-ACTAS. Not an original thought, of course, but one a bit thin on good solutions. On Monday evening at the Duntroon football field, I watched Curva International Director Alfred Galustian conduct a training session for the Woden Valley players who are presently undertaking a fabulous technical development program designed and conducted by Curva ACT as part of their off-season preparation for season 2010. It's a very new initiative at Woden Valley Football Club and in no small measure is a response to the standards set by John Mitchell at ANU. In this particular case, the Woden Valley players and parents paid for Curva to conduct the training. Alfred Galustian was a revelation. His technical expertise is called upon by the very best European Premier League clubs, Arsenal and AC Milan, to name two. It made me realise two things, that our academy / high performance programs are in most cases likely to be a long way short of the standard of technical knowledge and instruction resident in an international organisation such as Curva. The pressure will really be on the technical staff at Capital Football to deliver a coherent and robust technical development program across all the age groups. But I guess that was always the challenge. Time will tell and people are watching closely and hoping for so much more than the time-expired academy system. But that again is not news. As you know, the Near Post Local is a strong supporter of the high-performance program. But like anyone else, we're looking for the best possible results. The second point follows from the first. How will Capital Football get the coaches appointed to the high-performance age groups to the appropriate standard, communicate the detail of the high-performance program, and quality control the conduct of the programs at every age group by gender? I say this because this is what an international organisation like Curva does every week and all round the globe on one unified curriculum. It is real in all material detail and not just in outline, like our new national curriculum. Our high-performance coaches are people drawn from our community, dedicated to football, good people, people who volunteer their services, and good thing they do, because if they did not, under the present arrangements, we would have no development process at all. But do our high-performance coaches know all that they need to know now, as you would hope they did know from the new national curriculum as the programs now get underway? Clearly they don't. Why not? What has been done to fill the knowledge gap until the new national curriculum detail and training resources are available and implemented? I ask these questions not by way of criticism, but by way of inquiry. If we say we will do things for players and their coaches, they should be done and done in time to be effective. I'd like to say something else. You pay for Curva's services. You pay for what you get. And what you get is top class by all international standards of technical football training. But then you pay for the Capital Football High Performance Program. It's not unreasonable to ask yourself a simple question. Is the Capital Football Program to the same professional standard? It's a good question to ask. It's a fair question to ask. If you look closely, you'll find Curva is cost competitive and most definitely cost effective. I found myself thinking an interesting thought as I stood and watched the training. Who is best placed to conduct this specialised technical development training in the ACT? Perhaps we should outsource our high-performance training where we can, not necessarily to Curver, but to an expert party. You might like to ask yourself the same question. Just consider the possibility. Woden Valley Football Club did, and Curver has delivered training. As an aside, the Woden Valley Football Club president, Alan Hind, has made it clear to players attending the Curver development program for the club, if the club raises sufficient funds in the off-season, they will rebate part of the cost of the program to the players. That's the way to do it. In due course, I hope we will have a further lengthy discussion with the Capital Football Technical Director, Ian Shaw, and see this from his point of view. There's always two sides to a story. Perhaps we're all seeing it the same way anyway. I don't know. We'll try and find out for you. Now to our interview. This is part two of the near post-local interview with John Mitchell, coach of the ANU Premier League and the ANU Under 20 Elite program, a remarkable initiative in favour of developing the best of our 17-year-old to 20-year-old male players for whom there is no other viable or substantial development process to hand in the ACT. In this interview, we're about to hear John takes us a step further. He speaks of the ANU Under 20 Elite program and its prospects going forward. This is important, for his initiative took the ACT Premier League football circle by surprise. Different, daring and positive in all respects. No wonder players have sought out the ANU as a club of choice if they harbour ambitions to make it to the professional footballing ranks. So here we go. Now, we're talking about this gap in our players' development from 17 to 20. We know that Capital Football, under this new high-performance program, has determined that it run an under-17s program and an under-20s program. But the under-20s is really only in October, November, according to their timetables. It's not a very rich diet that's going to be offered. To my mind, the gap is still wide and largely unaddressed. Would that be a reasonable summary?
Yeah, my understanding is that there won't be a 17s or 20s this year.
Well, that would probably explain why the 17s and 20s have not been published. That being the case, we're right back to where we started from, which is an empty space.
Yeah, yeah. A tragic empty space.
Indeed. Now,
tragic because these kids have been used to a really high level of training.
Yes.
By the age of 17. I mean, the level of training at the ACTAS program is the equivalent of anywhere else in the country.
Mm.
And then they don't have anything. Well, they have a very minimal club-based program over a short period.
Now, of course, this led us also into the issue of the initiative at ANU. Now, of course, there are many structural variations to a Premier League club and the ACT Premier League competition, and the ANU club is just another structural variation, if I can put it that way. If, as I understand it, in ANU's case, John, the Premier League and the pathways are delivered under this ANU Elite proposal,
mm-hmm.
and the 18s and 16s are delivered by Radford.
We have a memorandum of understanding with Radford. I am an old friend of Steve Ozowski. He actually used to give me a lift to training back in the late 70s, so that's a long time ago now. Steve coaches the under-18s, which is essentially the Radford first team. You know, we have a working relationship. During the year, a number of the ANU pathway team players played for the under-18s in various games. So there is some...
Oh, there's crossover?
There is some crossover between the two
good.
Groups.
Yeah.
Certainly they're invited to the trainings. I make sure that the training diary is always sent out to Steve, in case any of the players are interested in coming along. They have a new director of coaching this year, I believe. that's the term, and that we're already in discussions about their involvement in some of the work we do over the summer.
Well, it's going to be a plus for Radford.
Well, I hope so, yeah. I think it's a growing entity. I think we're both feeling out the nature of the relationship. The school is a separate entity, and we respect that. The university has no other access to underage players because it's a university. And so this is hopefully a beneficial solution. And hopefully this year we'll see a number of last year's under-18s come along to the ANU and play for the club.
The first season has concluded under this new model that you've been using. What would be your first season's reflections?
Oh, it was a fantastic success. It's been wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I know that Marco has. I've learned a lot. Reflection on the players. I think each of the players would say that they have learned something and enjoyed their season. We came out with a bit of a bang.
Sure did.
Did all right. The second half of the season, we didn't.
Why was that, do you think? That surprised a lot of people.
Yeah. There was only one period of one game where I didn't think we were competitive. Mm. That was for a short period against Belcon in the first round, when we lost to them in the first round. In the second round of the competition, I thought we were competitive in all the games. Mm. We typically only lost by the odd goal. Even against Canberra FC, I thought we were highly competitive during the game. And in fact, we had at one all into the second half, we had a very good chance, one-on-one in the box, which we missed, and would have changed the nature of the game. So we were competitive without being successful. Obviously, a lot of us have been sitting around thinking about how come. The obvious and easy answer is, boys and versus men, and we got beaten up and all that sort of stuff. I actually don't think that so much. I think there are some things about younger players. When you don't have any older players in the squad at all, younger players continue to make errors because they're trying to play.
Yeah.
They try and play out from the back, and because it's hard to keep concentration for a full 90 minutes. I mean, it is for all players, but I think particularly for younger players to keep concentration for a full 90 minutes means that we will make errors and we're putting ourselves in a vulnerable position because we're trying to play football, which means we're trying to pass our way out of trouble. That's going to put us into those vulnerable positions where we can concede. In the first round, my suspicion is that we did better because we were that much better prepared physically and technically than the other teams. My suspicion is in the second round, the other teams had caught up a little bit and made us pay for our errors, far more so than we were made to pay in the first round. Partly to do with being younger and making errors, partly to do with a style of play, trying to play instead of trying to boot the ball to safety and just, bed down and try and protect the goal. Mm. We put ourselves in a very attacking position each game, which was fantastic from a footballing spectator point of view, but at the same time did make us vulnerable. And when you can't concentrate for the full 90 minutes and then you talk about then concentrating for a full season, my suspicion is that that's where we started to get beaten. We would make errors, and in one of the games against one of the other teams, one of the top four teams, I actually think we only made as many errors as they scored goals, which means that they were incredibly successful at making us pay.
That's cruel.
and yet we'd made several chances and were unable to score. So, I mean, football's a bit like that, and I think we would be mistaken to believe that the winner has played the best football. Mm. It's one of the beauties of the game is that you can win games without.
How did your players feel at the end of the season about their campaign?
I frustrated, I think. Frustrated because we had not capitalised on such a great beginning. By and large, we felt that we were certainly worthy of a top four finish. We certainly played good enough football to be in a top four, and I think that's fair. I think that most observers would feel the same way.
Yeah.
We didn't make that. We got beaten in a couple of games by teams that were far less capable than ourselves. Happens. So we were disappointed, the players were disappointed, and felt like we hadn't fulfilled our potential. Having said that, the overarching experience as we've now started to train again for our National Youth League games is one of satisfaction about what we achieved, looking forward to next season, to being able to build on it and make something more happen.
In relation to this squad, can you just tell me how the Pathways and Premier League team work? So you settle on a total squad number to cover off both teams, do you?
Yes.
What number do you generally try and recruit?
You're listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, and we are speaking to John Mitchell, coach of the ANU Premier League.
At the ANU this year, we decided to have a very thin Premier squad, and we settled on 30 to cover two teams.
Mm.
Now, the reason that we did that is because the last thing we wanted was one of our better players not playing. We had an arrangement with the State League One team that we would be able to access players for either the Prems or the Pathway group on a given weekend. If things got a bit tight in terms of injury. However, the only time things got tight was not due to injury, largely due to the good work by Andrew Young in preparing our players. We didn't have a lot of injuries. We got the flu a bit in the middle of winter. Yeah, that was a bit difficult. And so for our last game, I think we had three players out with the flu.
They come to ANU, you get the lot.
That was a bit of a difficulty. But, you know, we survived pretty easily with a thin squad. I don't know if we will go quite so thin next year. The advantage is that everyone in the Premier squad played every week. No one missed out on a game, which for a number of other clubs isn't always the case.
No, particularly those that harbour larger squads. It's grim when someone stands on the other side of the fence. Not even on the card.
Yeah.
No, that's no good at all.
That's a difficulty. So having a structure that allows us to everyone to hit a game every week is a worthwhile thing. And we were talking about that earlier in the week, about how we're going to structure it this year to make sure that that still happens, and yet to make sure that we have a bit more depth in our squad. I don't think you have to be a genius to work out that when we made substitutions, we often didn't improve as markedly as other teams that made substitutions. In other words, our depth of playing roster wasn't as strong as most of the other clubs we played. You know, I remember when Canberra FC made some subs against us, we were winning in the play at that point. Stevie Lee came on and absolutely destroyed one side for them. You know, it was a really lovely performance by him, set up two goals for them and essentially won them the game. Lovely to have a sub that can do that sort of stuff for you.
Go like the wind on the right flank.
Yeah,
absolutely. So you'd settle on something of around a bit plus of 30 this time around, the second season?
Yeah, well, again, it depends on the quality of the players that come along, what happens at ACTAS this year, and whether the players leaving ACTAS are interested in coming along to us. Depends how many Radford players want to continue on and play with us.
Mm.
We'll have a look at what's available and make our decisions based on who's there. If there's only, five men and a dog, then we'll have to think seriously then.
I don't think you're in any danger at that moment. Okay, so in this process, 17 to 20, because that's really where you're targeting, isn't it?
Well, last year there were also, I know you're talking about the 17 to 20, but there's a group of kids that don't make it into ACTAS.
Yeah, absolutely there is,
So they leave the under 15s. Yeah. And our pathway group, the bulk of our pathway group, were under 16. So the kids that didn't make ACTAS. And it was actually an interesting game when we played ACTAS, because they were playing their old teammates from the under 15 academy side of the previous year. And a lot of good friends playing opposite each other, and a very youthful pathway game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mostly under 16 on the park.
No, you make a good point, because it really goes back down to 16.
Mm.
Yeah, quite right. That said, the elements of your program. What are the key elements of your program, say, from close of this season, last game this season, where do you head to the start of the next season?
The one thing that I've been trying to press Capital Football to adopt is what's called a periodised program.
Yeah.
The idea that in order to physically develop players, you need to have a long-term view of when they are peaking, when they are working, and when they are resting.
Mm.
This kind of traditional idea that you play winter sports in the winter and summer sports in the summer is not conducive to good periodised model.
No,
a periodised model recognises the importance of tapering, of developing into peak weeks, and of the desperate need to, particularly for young kids during growth spurts, we talked about earlier on, the desperate need to rest and recover. Monitoring that is one of the key tasks of what we do.
Mm.
So, as I said before, Andrew Young was kind enough to act as one of our consultants and write us a periodised program. In last year, we began with a very strong emphasis on strength development. We recognised we were going to play against men, and so we spent a lot of time in the gym.
And how far out at the start of the season did you start that?
That was in November.
Right.
We did 10 to 12 weeks, three times a week in the gym, with just a couple of very light sessions on the field, not heavy endurance VO2-based sessions, but complement that strength-based. We then went into a power phase. So we dropped the strength-based training in the gym into power. So fast movements of lighter weights in the gym, and all of our on-field training adopted the same principle.
Right, mirrored that. Yeah.
So we went into, you know, I go and watch some other squads training, and I see them doing, you know, units of 5 or 6 minutes before there's a stop. And I think to myself, it's very rare in a football match for things to go 5 or 6 minutes without a stop. There is a stop that's either a free kick or there's a throw-in or someone gets injured or whatever. The kind of accepted ratio is we can go for 3 minutes and we then have about a minute's rest. But we're not always going at 100%. So how do you encourage players to move at 100% when they're involved but still be able to jog and position themselves at maybe 50%, 60% for the rest of the time? And the answer is in the way you train needs to mirror that. So we were doing segments of 30 seconds or 45 seconds within a very intense game environment where players would have to turn it on for a period of time. Let's say we're pressing in the final third, pressing up into the opposition and absolutely going hell for leather for 45 seconds with the aim of winning the ball back. And then we stop and rest. So developing periodized models that include strength development, power development, and then we grow into an endurance development process in preparation for the season. So by the time the season started, our endurance ability, our stamina ability was at its fore, and our strength had already been developed and evolved into a power response. This year's a little different. We've got this rather exciting opportunity to play some National Youth League games. We'll probably play 8 or 9.
Prior to the season commencing.
So we don't have the luxury of a strength phase, because strength phases in the gym slow players down. So if we want these players to be available to maybe get a contract with the Youth League team, then they need to be up and ready to play. So we've stepped back from the strength development aspect. We're maintaining endurance by gameplay at the moment rather than by running. We will have a phase now until mid-December during which we will play 6 games. Prefer to train 3 times a week. Funnily enough, we can't get a ground. It's a bit of a difficulty in Canberra. This is one of the planning issues, one of the administrative issues of how do we organise to know that if we're going to have programs that run for 12 months, we need grounds for programs. What's more, we need grounds. We've got to recognise that it gets fairly hot, which means we've got to have the grounds that allow us to play in the heat, which means either under lights at night time or small-sided with small goals, portable goals. These are logistical issues that need to be in place to support 12-month round programs, and they're quite difficult for us. So we're training at the moment. Some weeks we get 3.
And the surfaces need to be acceptable too.
And the and a lot of the ACT government surfaces are all off-bound at the moment because they're in repair mode. But again, that's a timing thing. You would like to believe that you could have quarantined a couple of the grounds and done it in a staggered way so that the training could continue. But at the moment, everyone is trying to share hawker with half an hour here and an hour there and so on, which is, you know, because it's a synthetic surface or the AIS synthetic. And, you know, and we're just one of those groups that are trying to share those surfaces with the others. So we're not training as much as we'd like to. We're usually, typically, twice a week and playing one game a week. We will continue at that season-like training program until December. We'll then have a break, a recovery break for 3 or 4 weeks, during which they'll be given a pretty much a VO2 program of fartlek running to do in their own time, some gym work. When we come back, we'll resume this program until the end of January, and then we will back off and do some specific power-based work, jumps, leaps, agility work, and so on, leading into the next season.
And obviously the opportunity to play the National Youth League teams defines itself, because that's when the A-League season's on.
It's fantastic. It was lovely to read in the paper that Ben Buckley's wanting to get Canberra into the National Youth League. It'll be a great opportunity to for Canberra if that occurs.
Wanted to talk to you about that, but just before I do, the system you've described is well in advance of anything I've seen domestically here amongst the Premier League clubs.
Look, the research is out there, the expertise is out there, and it one only needs to
access it.
Well, yeah. Yeah,
I mean, it was
one of my bugbears when I was at Capital Football was we used the AIS so little. Mm. One of the world's foremost development programs, mm. sporting development programs, and it was on our doorstep, and we need to go and learn from them. They've got a fantastic set of resources there, not just in football, but across the whole physical development realm. They have one of the best video services available, where they will take and be able to offer an analysis on games.
I want to pin this point for the listener, because I think it's easy to say, too easy actually, to say, yes, but if you recruit the best players, obviously you'll get better. Well, I don't know about that. You can certainly get some excellent juniors coming through and get very ordinary results, even though you've got them. What you've got is a program that develops them, and that underpins the performance on the field.
We unashamedly are devoted to the development of the individual players, and it does set us apart, because
that will make the difference.
Yeah, we try and balance. We're a member of a club. We're the Premier League squad of a club, and therefore we want to honour that club and do as well as we can for that club. We simply believe that the best way to do that is to develop each of the players as well as we can, rather than...
Would have thought it's unarguable.
Well, there are some that would believe in development of the team above the individual aspects of the play, and obviously it's not an either or; it's a balancing act.
Yes, it is.
Let's take the A League. Central Coast Mariners have been in nearly every Final Four, but you won't see a lot of Central Coast Mariners in the Socceroos. They don't go there to pick the best players. They're not into finding the finest players. They're there to put together a team that is going to be competitive in the league. I don't think that pays them disservice. That's not what they're about. Whereas Sydney, I remember when Sydney first developed, they said, we will only recruit players who have played, Australian players, who have played for the country at some level. There was an absolute rule on their recruitment policy. Yeah. You must have played with the Young Socceroos or the Joeys or the Full Socceroos to be recruited. Now, I don't know if they still maintain that, but it's an interesting difference in strategy and policy and how you're going about your business. We're more like Sydney. We're wanting to find the finest players and work to improve those finest players. We're not as focused on, we'll do anything we can to get a team over the line into the semi-finals.
Players will come if they know someone is interested in helping them become better.
I believe so.
That's what they'll come for.
And I believe that's the gap.
Come for that.
That's the gap in the market.
Yep.
And that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I think you've hit a bullseye there. And it was obvious from the team played through the year that this is the way it was going. For those that knew players that had played elsewhere, it was very obvious that they had moved on, shall I say.
It's no surprise to me that we had a fellow join the club halfway through the season. He'd been playing with the Brisbane Strikers in Brisbane in their Premier League. He talked around town when he came to Canberra, and he ended up on our doorstep. Because he wanted to play and train at a higher level.
Within a regime that approximated that.
Now, he was living in Canberra, so that was the way it was, but he was going to do it as closely as he could. So he came along to us.
This, if I may suggest, is maybe an unintended consequence of your initiative, but it is deliverable out there into the Premier League. It is that, by demonstration, it has lifted the bar for a number of other clubs.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the case...
I'm not asking you to agree, I'm just saying that, for me, sitting inside another club, that was a compounding effect. Common sense prevailed at the end of the day when people looked at what you'd set up and what you were doing and said, no good admiring the problem, we now have to do something about this because this is producing a result. Why shouldn't we be going in that direction?
Well, that's fabulous. If that's what happens, then that's a terrific outcome.
Well, I think it is. I think that's a positive contribution to the standard of football. That's what I think the ANU initiative has done. Now, can I just linger on the A-League just for a bit? And, of course, we've fallen into a black hole over the A-League bit. And I have to say for myself, I'd rather have one than not have one. But not having one doesn't upset my day. What does concern me is that I thought a better target would have been to have had an A-League youth team in the context of this gap we're talking about. Would that not have been the way to go?
Oh, yeah. I mean, at the moment, there are no youth teams that aren't associated with an A-League franchise.
Yeah.
So the FFA have been fairly strict about that. The only comment I would make about watching or being involved with Canberra City when they were first in the Phillips Soccer League and then Watching the Arrows and then the Canberra Cosmos and
yep.
And now this current bid. Canberrans only follow successful teams.
Mm.
We get excited about it, the small number that would turn up, the 1,500 that turn up to every Cosmos game. There are only 1,500 that are going to turn up. But if you go and find out how many people are devoted to the Canberra Raiders, I don't reckon you'll find many more. The same about the Brumbies. If they're winning, you will find 20, 25,000 out at Canberra Stadium. And the same would happen for a football team, an A-League team here, if we were winning. Which means, what do you need? The formula has to go then. What do you need to win? You need, well, I would have thought to get the best team in the league, you're going to have to compete monetarily. So having just enough money, if that's what Ivan has managed to put together, isn't enough. We need as much as the richest team. We need to get the best import. Not just another import who might work out. The income will come from bums on seats. And bums on seats, as I said, I think is absolutely associated or correlated with success on the field.
Yeah.
Success on the field won't be assured by spending a lot of money, but it will certainly not be helped along by spending no money. So we need to be very clear that if we're going to have an A-League team, it needs to be successful. And in order to be successful, it needs a massive budget, not just a just-get-by budget. The second thing I would say is we need to have a bit of a think about South American football. There's a great club called Boca Juniors. Juniors
make... Farmers club.
Yeah, but not many people know they make most of their money from the sale of players.
Mm.
They're conscious of it. Their club strategy is to make sure that happens. Their whole intent... Yes, they like winning the local league, South American league, but they recognise that their income is going to come from selling players, developing them, and so they got very good at developing young players, so that they could sell them to rich European marketplace and make a lot of money.
Mm.
That's the way it survives as a club, and so they can now win the local league. It's not a bad model for a team the size of Canberra, but that requires a little bit of strategic thinking of saying, well, so it harks back to what I said earlier on in this interview. If you recognise what the advantage Canberra has an advantage in terms of training because every kid at a young age can get to training as often as is needed.
Yeah.
They don't have to travel a million miles to get there. We have the best facilities by far. We have a climate that allows you to play soccer all the year round. We should make that our advantage.
Mm.
So why not think about becoming the Boca Juniors of Australia? Why not think about that we will make a lot of money, we will make our income not from being a competitor with Sydney, but by being the best seller of exported soccer talent. In order to do that, we have to be the best developer of soccer talent. So we start from the youngest age group.
Yeah.
A strategic approach then says that's where to start.
Yeah.
Your initial question about shouldn't we have first thought of a youth team? Absolutely. In fact, we should have thought not just of a youth team, but an under 16 team, an under 15 team, an under 10 team that goes all the way down so that we're developing the players that can be eventually the source of funds to sustain a National League club.
That development model is core business to the peak body, Capital Football.
Yes.
That being the case, the spotlight shines clearly and very specifically on how this high-performance program, now required by the FFA under this new curriculum, how it will roll out, how robust it will be, how effective it will be. Because it appears to be the only vehicle that the peak body will use at this point. If it works, well, we're all in front.
Having worked at Capital Football and having played fairly seriously and having coached, I no longer think that the association, the organisation of the Federation, is the best place for that.
Mm.
I did, but I think that the Federation sits above all elements of the game. The development of the game, not just the development of elite players. And yet the development of elite players is so distinct, so separate, particularly the sort of development we're now talking about, that we need to be able to portion budgets, money, resources unequally to that end if that is one of our strategic aims.
We're talking equity, not equality.
Yeah, we are. But the problem is that the Federation can't be seen to be doing that. So the membership is, it's an association of members. So we need to be aware, can that actually operate in any functional way? Can it be responsible for elite development? I used to believe that it was the best arm because it was non-partisan, because it was away from any individual. And I now don't believe that to be the case.
That's the very reason I put the question to you, because the lingering doubt I have in my mind about this is we've gone from an academy system, fell into some disrepair. We're going into a high-performance program. Some might say, well, this is just the same sort of architecture being rebadged. And we have a national curriculum which will allegedly drive what is taught, but we haven't yet seen the content and the specifics of that. And this will all be underpinned by the personnel that can be drawn out of the ACT system to do the coaching and instruction.
Mm-hmm.
So this thing is feeds on itself. There are so many parts of this that need to be developed. Will it all actually develop, and how quickly?
So for me, the obvious is to look at who already does elite development. As I mentioned before, the AIS does elite development,
yeah,
but it's a national body. ACTAS, the Academy of Sport, is devoted to elite development,
mm,
supporting national team players. That, to me, is the obvious body to approach. It would be the obvious body to take over the management of the elite programs, to ask ACTAS, I mean, I know they're interested in talent development programs, into feeder groups. It would be interesting, I had initial talk some years ago with the then manager about ACTAS taking responsibility from as young an age as under 10 all the way through to under 20 in a football context, and they certainly were thoughtful about the idea and considered it a serious possibility. There would still only be a small number of scholarships,
mm,
and it may be a user pays organisation around, mm, that, but it is a capital football anyway.
Yeah,
the point,
right,
being that people that are expert in elite development are responsible for meeting the elite development aims, rather than people that are expert in organising competitions,
yeah,
having as a sidearm,
yeah,
an elite development group. Now, whichever way you talk about it, whichever language, high performance academy,
yeah,
whatever, doesn't make any difference to that. It seems to me that we can't get that balance right. We haven't been able to get that balance right. We've tried for a little while, perhaps it worked. It's now clearly not. So is there an alternative way to do it? My tendency would be go and find an elite development group like ACTAS, invite them to tender.
Perhaps you outsource it. What's wrong with that?
Outsource it to a bunch of specialists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you were in the peak body and you're in the business of running competitions, the level down of general development of players might be your regime, but clubs have a role to play in that as well.
Absolutely.
And perhaps the energy needs to go to reinforcing and building clubs' ability to develop players.
Well, certainly one of the things that we tried to do was to get, we've mentioned Colin a lot of times today, but I think asking Colin to write a particular training program for coaches of youth teams, mm-hmm, junior teams, was a really important thing. I think that's a first step for me towards what the association needs to be about in terms of supporting club development or the club's development of their players.
Because clubs, sorry to cross you there, but clubs cannot be allowed to avoid their responsibility in the development of players. If everyone just sets up competitions and competitions, someone's got to do the developing. Mm. Coaches are the conduit for that.
Well, you would hope so. In the end, I think that the kids are essentially teaching themselves at the moment, because there's not a lot else.
Looks a bit that way.
That's happening. And I don't mean to be offensive in that towards people that are trying
reality,
it does seem to me that we don't seem to be able to give the kids the appropriate level of instruction at the appropriate time so that they will maximise their
yep,
potential.
Yep.
How we do that, I think they're important questions, and some of the answers are in the support of clubs,
yep,
but also the clear boundaries of what clubs are not there to do. Now, there's a lot of complaints were made around the formation of the academy system by clubs, saying, well, you're stealing all our good players. The bottom line is that the vast majority of players in the local Premier League have come back from the academy system.
Yeah.
So they go into the academy, they get some development.
They go back to club.
And they go back to club. So that it doesn't kind of wash for me that elite programs diminish clubs. I think that actually support clubs. What I'm very clearly understanding of what we do at ANU is we have the players that missed out. We don't have the top notch because they got their contract at the AIS.
Yep.
You know, they got their youth contract at wherever else in the NYL. We're talking about the players that didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know, we're a club that says, well, this is the second tier, the group that maybe we think should have got it. You know, maybe in another day, another trial, might have got it. Or yeah. they're the late developers, the young, the Lukes of the world. That, you know, with a little bit of extra body mass, all of a sudden improves his chances. Yeah. Now, that to me is a critical role in being for clubs. And the clubs understanding that they're not the peak body, but they're the support body to this process, seems to me to be critical.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, the other thing that comes to mind about this, because I don't mean to lay this all at the doorstep of the ANU initiative, but sometimes these things, again, it's waves in the pond not splashing, and the wave goes out and it starts to shake a lot of things around a bit. If nothing else, it the questions come back up. And the questions come back up because the solutions aren't there. Mm-hmm. In regard to football development, that just is abundantly clear. Let me just explore this with you. We have clearly a club like Canberra FC, dominant. What a wonderful 10 years for a club to have, mm-hmm. dominant. Mm-hmm. I recall watching them play against the Melbourne Knights in the bushfire appeal. Mm. And I got back in my car and put my head in my hands and thought, how on earth, they're playing like this now. Well, they didn't get any worse. Hmm. What do they do? Do they just go round the garden again? Or do they look for a higher level of competition? Victorian Premier League, New South Wales Premier League. I know we've made forays out into this in the past, and we seem to have retreated back into our island, either by design or by instruction, or by rejection from New South Wales, I don't know. So there's another issue. Sometimes a club can simply play its way beyond its competition.
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt. I mean, Canberra sees the Premier team by a mile this year and the last several. They need to have a challenge.
And see, that's another level, isn't it? That's another option.
There were two things that I spent a lot of time at when I was at Capital Football in this regard. Mm. The first was to lobby what was then Soccer New South Wales for a return to the position the Blue Devils had. That the decision to remove the Blue Devils was diabolical for Canberra football.
Yes.
It ceased that pathway into what is the second best league in the country. An obvious opportunity for young Canberrans to find the next step.
Yep.
Previously, Canberra Deacon had been a member of that competition as well. And again, I think had been unfairly removed from the competition. The first was to lobby the New South Wales Federation. We believed that we were almost there, but in the end, that didn't come to fruition. I was advised by the technical director who I'd been liaising with, who was at that point Brent Gocciolina, that we were a very good chance of being included, and then he rang and apologised and said that we missed out, which was really disappointing because it had taken quite a bit of work to try and get us back into a position where we might have got a team included in that league, a Canberra-wide team.
Yes.
We even had a name registered. For that. The second attempt is that I made initial contacts with a number of other associations in the local area, in Wollongong and down in Albury, and asked whether they would be interested in a summer Champions League, where the two or three best Canberra teams would play against the two or three best Wollongong-based teams, or Albury champion, maybe one from out near Bathurst. And we would have a kind of a Champions League round robin over the summer. They were all pretty interested. Just before I left Capital Football and I was conducting a review of the Men's Premier League, that was certainly one of the proposals that was very much on the table, one that I had hoped they might have continued to pursue. So I imagine that that's the best way to go, is to talk about a reward competition like a Champions League. I know that the other associations are desperate for the same because they also want to cross-fertilise.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
We're all in the same position that we're never going to get allowed involvement into the New South Wales Premier League, not in the foreseeable future.
No.
And even if we do, we will eventually be kicked out again, just like we have been in the past. So let's
construct other moves.
Yes, let's take the responsibility, do it ourselves. Yeah. We're a great centre. There's no reason we couldn't invite a team from Albury and a team from Bathurst and a team from Wollongong to come here and play a series of round-robin games in the summer. It would extend our season. It would give something for the Canberra FCs of the world to look forward to and to play for.
It's this kind of thinking that underpins the ANU solution. You're constructing something different. You're not waiting for it to arrive. You've actually constructed opportunity to develop and play to fill that gap. That's to be commended. What clearly is required by every club in the Premier League is sponsorship money. If you've got a licensed club and you've got facilities, well, you're looking pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
For the rest, it's operate on the smell of an oily rag. Now, clearly your program got good sponsorship, and I think that needs to be noted by the listener too, that everything costs something.
Yeah, we went from, I think, I can't remember what they got last year. We ended up with just nigh on $50,000 as a sponsorship this year, which was a fantastic achievement.
Yes.
It enabled us to go to gyms free of charge for the players, for the Premier League players. Enabled us to train at the AIS. It enabled us to have good footballs to train with, to pay for that. Enabled us to have a new strip and things that were possible.
But that sponsorship was directed at you. Premier League and your Pathways teams.
Yeah, it was attracted by that group.
Yep.
To some extent, the it was extended beyond. So we employed we got a specific sponsorship for a goalkeeping coach.
Mm-hmm.
Employed Paul Jones as our head goalkeeping coach, and he coached all the goalkeepers at the at the club, not just the Premier League.
That's great.
So at some level, it was for the Premier League.
Yep.
And for at some level for the rest of the club. I was paid out of that sponsorship money as well, and took training sessions for the other squads within the ANU on a fairly regular basis.
I get your thought on this. All of these pledges have been given to the A-League bid for Canberra. Somewhere or another, they've got enough pledges from the bigger money end of town to scrape together $6 million on the table, less 2.5 promised by the ACT government. I would anticipate that the fabric of that bid will now disintegrate. Given that this bid isn't successful, people aren't really going to necessarily hang around for a whole bunch of time. Wouldn't it be great if some of this money, allegedly in support of football, would redirect itself down into clubs?
Yeah, sure. No. Simple answer is yeah, sure. But I look, I just think,
and your
so
hesitation
much,
is there?
Well, people want to be associated with an A-League club because it means that if you're one of the directors, and the Prime Minister comes to town, he sits in the box with you, and that's, you're essentially purchasing public profile. That's the advantage. The guy that owns Gold Coast gets his head on the box, and on a regular basis, at least every second week, and has the Prime Minister sitting in the box every now and then, or whoever else, the Premier,
as opposed
or whatever.
To an instant coffee and a sausage sandwich at Waden and Clothes. Eh?
That's and it's just a difference. I mean, that's why it is, people. Yeah. It's not a profit making investment.
No, it's
but you get outcomes, or you get dividends of another sort, which, you know, for a business person is public profile is pretty hard to purchase. And I would have thought for a couple of million bucks, the public profile of having access to that level of government, that level of business, is it's pretty special, you know. A couple of million dollars of advertising doesn't go that much, that far.
Yeah, and the truth of it is, for the reasons you've just very clearly described, that money to tracking an A-League bid isn't the money that is going to find its way to Premier League football.
Not in Canberra, no.
No.
No, I mean, we've got no...
What a shame,
mate. Meeting the president. I know the president of the ANU is a wonderful fella, but I'm not quite sure that sitting with him in the box.
There you go, mate.
But, you know, I mean, that's just the difference. And we're into community sponsorship, and we need to start talking. We had a wonderful sponsorship from the tradies organisation when I was at Capital Football, and I know it lasted for a year or so afterwards. They're a great supporter of the community. I know, you know, CFMU have done the same at the Raiders at the moment, you know. So, and there are the Hellenic clubs support the Woden group, I know, and in the Premier League they support the Woden Juniors, and in the Premier League they support Olympic. You know, some of the local clubs are really supportive of
I only track this issue for one reason, and that is you have lifted the bar, so other clubs will respond by trying, quite rightly and quite properly, to deliver higher quality developmental training, football related, to their players. To do that, they've got to find money. The reality is the sponsorship money is pretty difficult to find in Canberra.
Look, I, you know, like all occupations or professions, I think that there are people that are good at this and people not so good at this.
True.
And one of the problems that local Premier League clubs have is that they appoint people who aren't so good at it because they're really keen and really interested in football and their son plays in the under-12s or something. And they think, well, you know, he's a keen bean. Let's put him in charge of sponsorship. And, you know, I mean, there are people that are really good at this game. We need to acknowledge them and employ them and give them some...
Some people really are good at finding a dollar, aren't they?
Well, they are, and there are professionals at it. I remember speaking with one not so long ago who had worked for a number of charities in town, and he was on a relatively small retainer, but then a percentage of whatever sponsorship money he could bring in.
And that's fair game.
And had a wonderful CV of what he had brought in. You think, well... That's the sort of character you need to employ. Yeah. But that's a professional body. That's professional thinking within a club. Again, I don't mean to be unkind, but I think that maybe the local Premier League clubs are not necessarily at
they're
that level
not
yet.
There yet. Mm. The quest to find more dollars might provoke it.
We look at the ANU, we had the benefit of a particular fellow who gave up his own time to find us money, and it was wonderful.
Yeah.
And he took it along and worked with the committee member who was responsible for it, who was smart enough to work out that this guy knew a hell of a lot about how to find money, and gave him his head and supported and so on. And the rest
is smart thinking.
Yeah. Smart thinking on both parts. Both parts, yeah.
John, I think we've just about covered it all.
Wow.
John Mitchell, thank you very much for your time. You've been most generous. Wish you all the best with the forthcoming season and these National Youth League games. You've raised the bar in the ACT, probably at a most unexpected time, but all these things never come according to plan, but when they do arrive, you've got to try and work the best out of them that you can. This is a thought-provoking and very positive contribution to football in the ACT.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Well, that's it for the Near Post Local. Remember, Canberra United play this Saturday at McKellar. Get out there and support them if you can. Premier League futsal this Thursday and Friday nights at the AIS Training Hall. The North and South Canberra futsal begins this week for all age groups. Summer 20s, summer 6s for women, masters for men and women. Look, it never stops, and a good thing too. So if you're getting to the Near Post, get there first. Enjoy your futsal and football. Go to the podcast and see you next week. Ta-da.
Your blood, the richest blue I've seen.